Now connecting to the Webcomic Beacon Extended Play.
Welcome to the Webcomic Beacon. This is Fess.
No, you're not.
Of one of 40URLs.com.
Yes.
It's not 40.
Confess.
So many webcomics. I'm possibly doing your webcomic right now.
And you don't even know it.
Hello and welcome to episode 144 of the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com. This is an EP episode. This is extended play of the Webcomic Beacon. This week, we are talking about... What is this week? We're talking about cast fillers. But before we get to that, who we have on the show for these EPs? We have, well, I'm of course Fess of Fessworks.com, but we also have new Webcomic Beacon staff with us here today. First and foremost, we have Adam Smithy of the Apple of Discord in Apple Valley. Welcome to the show.
Hello, hello.
As well as Alex Heberling of alexsguide.net. Welcome.
What's up?
As some people may have heard from the regular programming, Adam and Alex are now staff members of the Webcomic Beacon. And Alex is also on the newscasts. but Adam and Alex are going to be the forerunners for the EP episodes, particularly the EPs that deal with tropes and memes and challenges and such like that, as often as I can put them together for a show. There is no regular program schedule just yet for EPs, but it seems like if we can, we'll try to be doing them as they pop up on Sundays before a regular programming episode, typically at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. This week... we do have a guest with us, one who can lend his expertise or experience with the topic for this particular EP. We have Mike Delheim of Prepare to Die and the Wagon Webcomic Battle Trading Card Game. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. Good to be back.
Yeah, instead of having guests, I decided that... For the EPs, we're going to have experts.
I am a professional expert in the field of expertise.
So we were talking last week, for anybody who hung around after the last episode of the Beacon, trying to decide what we're going to do for today. And originally we were thinking about red shirts, because that's kind of a universally understood concept. But we think we're going to hold off on that one for a little bit and try to hit a bunch of Star Trek-related stuff all in one giant shot. So instead we're going to talk about some of the other concepts, ideas, tropes is the word that we're going to use a lot for this, that people are using, have used, will probably continue to use indefinitely to sort of flush out some of the empty spaces around the corners of their cast. Alex had a couple of really good suggestions. You want to hit us with one of them?
Sure. The first one I think we should cover, since we are all really into it, is called Those Two Guys.
Yeah.
It's basically these two guys who are completely ordinary and sort of, satellites to the main cast, but they kind of crop up now and then. And often they're sort of a peanut gallery type of pairing. One example I can think of is from the manga and anime Love Hina is Keiichi, is that his name? Keiichi's two friends from cram school. That he constantly forgets their names later on in the series after, he's become involved in his harem. And they're like, whenever they pop up, they're like, hey, we're your friends, Keiichi, don't you remember us? And he's like, what? Some other examples of those two guys.
I think the most famous ones are probably Rosencrantz and Guildenstern from Hamlet.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you've ever seen Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, they are so ambiguous in their those two guysy that they're not even sure which one of them is which. Like, Rosencrantz doesn't know whether he's Rosencrantz or Guildenstern because they're so used to being the two of them and essentially indistinguishable that they have some questions as to which one of them is actually which.
No, I think that a more famous pair you might run into would be Statler and Waldorf from The Muppet Show. These are two guys that are up in the audience basically heckling everything through and doing exactly what those two guys do, which is give you kind of a little bit of an outside perspective on what's going on. Sometimes it's the peanut gallery, just kind of sitting back and giving you that audience view that you go, what the hell's going on? Why are you doing that? It's to try to get you break that fourth wall a little bit and get you, you know, that unique perspective that kind of draws the audience in a bit more.
Mm-hmm. Or Bulk and Skull from the original Power Rangers.
Yes.
Now, you couldn't really call them ordinary until you compared them to the rest of the cast. And then they look downright, you know, civil. But the character idea, the two characters paired together are kind of indistinguishable. They really belong with that "and" in the middle of their names.
Mm-hmm.
It shows up time and again. Usually, like we said, it's a almost an extension of the main character, or the main group of characters. Often drifting further and further away from them as the story progresses. If they're really strong characters, they might eventually evolve into a different trope, which is called the power trio. Like, take a look at the original Star Trek.
Wait. Kirk. I got a quick question.
Okay.
Did somebody mention Jay and Silent Bob yet?
No.
Are they not those guys?
Not yet.
Okay, not yet. I was just wondering if they fell into that first one that you were talking about or not.
In most of the Kevin Smith movies, they do fill that role. Except for, like, Jay and Silent Bob, where they're the main characters, basically. Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to... Okay, go ahead.
No, it is a good point. They are... The question no one ever seems to ask is why those two guys are there. And I don't think it's really all that important. I mean, that's the purpose of this trope is they are a couple of characters. People can know their names. People will recognize them. They could even occasionally have an impact on the plot. But as far as strong writing, strong personality types, you basically have the two fairly normal guys who sort of stand at the side and try not to get killed by whatever is going on.
Gotcha. All right, you're on the trio power thingy.
Yeah, the power trio. If you look at the original main cast from Star Trek, you have Bones and Spock, who, minus Kirk, kind of become those two guys. Because when Kirk is rolling around with his shirt off, having sex with green women and, you know, threatening alien races with weapons that don't technically exist while still dancing along those gossamer lines of the Prime Directive.
Nice.
It's McCoy and Spock who are standing on the sidelines going, he's never actually going to be able to pull this off, you know. But when you have the two guys interacting much, much stronger with the main character, then they can evolve into the power trio, which is a different thing, but same sort of thing. So, Mike.
Yes.
One of the reasons that I declared you today's expert is that you have those two guys who've been in your comic practically since the beginning. I think they were in, what, the first 50?
Yeah, they were way back there. Two guys named Frank and Chuck, who who started off in the comic as two guards standing in front of a cave for some reason. We don't know why they put guards in front of this cave, but they did. And, yeah, the two of them just struck up a conversation and were supposed to be in there as just kind of filler characters that just were having a fun little conversation before they were supposed to die, basically. And apparently they didn't die. they ended up being a fairly integral part of the story plot and actually still are running around today. In fact, I think they've evolved into that power trio at this point, along with the captain. And yeah, their job is to make commentary on things and give you that base perspective from outside the main activities and kind of make a running commentary on what's going on.
So were you actually planning on killing them originally and they just failed to die when it was time?
Well, they were supposed to be, they were the first regular guards to be ever shown in the comic. And they were supposed to, yeah, they were supposed to be guards and they were beaten by the players and we were supposed to move past them.
They rolled a saving throw.
Something like 20. Yeah, they basically got knocked out. One was knocked out, put to sleep by a spell, and the other one got whacked in the back of the head, and they were both knocked out. And the players were supposed to move past them, and they even themselves make the comment, we were here, we got beaten by the players, and we're supposed to disappear. That's our job. And they left. But later on, I needed to make a transition away from the players just to, you know, make a transition. And I was like, okay, where do I want to go now? It's like, let's see what happened to those guards just for the fun of it. And we started following them instead. And they've been doing it ever since.
I think that that's one of the good the good uses for the those two guys is they give both a writer as well as the audience a chance to step back to kind of get out of the presumed insanity of whatever is going on and to see it from an outside point of view. I mean, even if they're there, they're more likely to, you know, realize this is crazy. This is stupid. We're all going to die. Why am I living in Sunnydale? They're going to see those things. They're going to be able to say those things.
Well, your core cast might not be able to.
Yes.
Yeah. That's generally how these guys work. If you read the dialogue that they go through, they've Frank and Chuck have been mentioned a lot of times as the kind of common man. People have compared them to just kind of day workers, like a construction crew kind of guys, just hanging out, looking at the job, going, yep, this is what we do, and this is how we do it, and it's not a big deal. And that kind of perspective kind of just gives you that break from, this is so serious, I can't stand it. And then they come along and go, meh, whatever, it's just kind of our job, let's move on. So it I think it helps break up the action a little bit. It gives you just that different feeling going on that you couldn't get without them. And it enriches your story plot more than anything else. It gives you something else to focus on besides just this is the main sequence of events and it's going to move along at its plotting pace. You get something else in there to, you know, mix up the whole group with. Which is really where they get some of their strengths from. Just being able to get into that secondary group of characters that isn't always involved with everything that's so dire and serious all the time.
Right. Which
helps a lot with story writing. It gives you a more diverse world to work with.
I guess when I heard of cast fillers, I would be assuming something a little bit more not as what ends up getting involved, obviously, as we've been talking about characters that have become a little bit more involved versus I was just thinking like, you know, the jack-off that showed up for one strip like 100 pages ago or even cameos, which could easily be, well, not necessarily cast filler, but that might not be the same thing as like taking up space in the comic versus like actually in the cast. I guess I'm wanting to break down the meaning of the definition of the angle.
Well, they can occupy any number of different things, like the Waldorf and Stradler from The Muppets. You wouldn't call either of them really in the cast, but they're enough that 20 years down the line, I remember their names. You know, that sort of a... they're actually... we can step back a little bit to somebody that is much more cast filler. Another one of the ones that we had was the recurring extra, which the two guys are kind of a higher form of the recurring extra. a recurring extra is really just a character who maybe was only ever meant to be in there once, but the creator took it upon themselves as a whim to keep sticking this character back in, not in the action, but, you know, just kind of a an aside to fans, a continuity nod, almost a human running gag.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like this squirrel from Ice Age.
Well, he sort of became plotsy as he went on more. More like the cat in Trigun.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm gonna name my
cat
next
that
dog
shows
Plotsy
up once per episode somewhere in the episode.
And then meows and then leaves.
Yeah, that sort of a thing. Where you just know you're watching it, you're going along, you see like, oh hey, that's that guy, and then he's gone again. And it's just like Jonathan in Buffy started out as one of these. He was just one of the guys that went to the school. I don't even think he had a name as a character the first couple of seasons that he showed up. He was just in the background. Of course, as he continued to hang along, the awesomeness of the cast rubbed off on him, and eventually he evolved into a supervillain, technically. But
I haven't seen all of Buffy yet.
Oh yeah.
It's too late for spoilers. It's over with.
Okay.
Oh,
I've already been spoiled on lots of things, so.
Well, then, like, if you're watching, The Last Airbender, you get the guy with his cabbage cart.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the cabbage guy.
Yes.
My cabbages!
Every single time.
He finds his cabbage cart destroyed by, you know, the gang.
Yes.
Or, like, to use one of our own comics as an example, as a one-off throwaway gag, I introduced, I suggested that they were going to be, for one of the How Not To's, they were going to be introducing a cute furry pet, and I had a brain-damaged raccoon that I named Mr. Fluffy Nuts, who, at the end of the entire three panels of this, was then eaten by the cast. but just because he was killed and eaten, it hasn't stopped him from showing up like six or seven more times.
Somehow, yes.
Once as a giant monster destroying the city on television, once as a robot when we were doing a questionable content parody. He was sitting on the back of somebody's couch. You know, I've taken a couple of opportunities to just sort of shove this basically just a running gag character who's, you know, I mean, he has no personality. I'm not even technically sure he's breathing at this point. you know, it's like he's on the limited print run for the Apple comics. He was on the inside cover of one of the comics. Because I didn't have anything better to put down there, so I just drew another one of him, and you know, that is the essentially the spirit of the recurring extra. It's not the character is, if you're going to draw an extra, take the extra 2 seconds to draw the same extra, and then it becomes a thing.
We've got a thing. Yes.
Yeah,
it does make a lot of sense in that direct when creating a world to instead of having to create a new crowd, a new populace for your town every single time you draw a scene of your town, to actually have recurring characters. It's like if you go every time in your comic you go back to the main city to rest or whatever you're gonna do, and you once in a while have the same characters wandering in the background, you go, oh yeah, I remember that guy from before. And yeah, you get into a consistency, I think.
It's a sort of conservation of detail thing.
And on the other side of this, people will notice if you don't do this occasionally. For instance, I know two of the ones that have always kind of stuck in my mind was both Star Trek Voyager and Battlestar Galactica.
Yes.
With a finite number of human beings to potentially be in the cast, they seem to burn through a lot of extras that you see once and then never see again.
Yeah, I never got that in Voyager. Yeah.
Voyager had like, what, 100 and something people on it?
And then you keep finding new people.
Yeah, it was. I bet if you actually went through and tagged all of the actors over the course of the 7 seasons, there were like 500 different various people that were on the show. And, you know, it's not really...
Maybe one of the decks has an extras garden.
Well,
they just ship some new ones.
They're all holograms. Every single last one of them.
Now, a show that didn't do that, that did handle the recurring extra fairly well, was Lost. But Lost had so many different crazy writing things going on simultaneously. You introduce any new character and everybody starts freaking out about them and speculating about, you know, well, I think this guy's actually God. Whoa, why? Because got a hat. And the others don't.
Yes, God has a hat.
A funny way of thinking about cast fillers, you could say basically anyone who's not a main character in Doctor Who has an increased rate potential to die by like a millionfold. Like the general populace, I guess, is what I'm angling for. You know, just crowds.
Yes. Oh yeah, there's another trope which goes into this, which is ghost extras, which I was confused when I saw the name on TV Tropes, but when I read it, it's really actually sort of neat. It's like there are more than 6 people working at the crime lab in Las Vegas on CSI.
Ah,
yes.
But they don't appear to be real people. Like, you know, something blows up and only the primary cast react to it. You know, something's going on and, you know, the fire alarms are going off and there's that guy in the background who's just dutifully plugging away at the microscope, oblivious to everything. That's because he's not really real. There's, they walk, I mean, unless you get one of those episodes where they decide that they're going to flip the focus off of the main characters and, you know, we're going to bypass the B team and focus on the C team, you know, be it lab technicians or the guys that work in the engine room that you've seen occasionally.
It's Pratchett, Earl, the janitor. Yes.
Terry Pratchett's the unseen academicals is set in Unseen University, but misses the wizards almost entirely. It's all about like the kitchen staff and the guys that refill the candles all over the place. It's the people that you never see. So you don't really realize how many people that are just floating around in these things that you watch and read that you never think about, that, you know, there's more than 4 police officers working out of the any one unit in New York, but you'd never know it from watching the TV shows.
No.
You'd never be able to tell because And surprise, it's always the same four cops that get the same jobs. They always are partnered up with one another. And you know, if by any means one of them would not be available, then he's going to get partnered up with the captain or somebody that we know who they are already, instead of just getting partnered up with, you know, that guy who also does the same job as him and is entirely talented, but we're not paying the actor to have a name or to talk.
Mm-hmm. an interesting example that I just remembered was there was an episode of Babylon 5 in season 4? Where the episode suddenly shifted to the perspective of two of these tech guys who are kind of floaters and went wherever was needed, and they were fixing stuff, and this big explosion happened, and it was sort of those two guys and recurring extras and ghost extras all in one. These two wisecracking tech guys.
Well, getting into that kind of group, just going into Star Trek again, once you go into Deep Space Nine and you end up having Quark and Rom, who were really just background guys working in the bar and things, and then all of a sudden Rom became this majorly huge character just running around and fan-favoriting guy. He never was meant to do anything. In fact, if you see his first episodes, the guy was just this pompous little jerk Ferengi, and then all of a sudden he was like Mr. Sensitive towards the end.
Well, you have two different forces acting on it, and you've got the creators who have their own narrative that they're trying to fulfill, and then you have the fans who, you know, are completely on their own. No one knows what the fans are going to do. The fans don't know what the fans are going to do.
Right.
There's a number of different examples, which we probably should save for a different episode, because I'm getting the infamous light saying that it's almost time. Mm-hmm. Where you have a character who either, like Mike's two guards or any number of other ones, the character is supposed to die, the character is supposed to go away, the character was not meant to be a recurring character, he was a one-shot, and the fan reaction to the actor, to the character that they portrayed, to the way he was written, is so strong that the creators can't help but bring them back in.
Right.
And occasionally, they even wind up being like main cast once they get back in, usually through the heavy application of retcon and
sometimes you don't even need retcon. Maybe it's even future plot rewriting just because.
Yes, this trope would actually be called the Ascended Extra.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, I believe we should probably call it quits here before we get into... The problem with talking about tropes is that it winds up being like wiki hopping. You mean to talk about one trope, and then in talking about it, you reference six others, mm-hmm. and then, I know, we should talk about this, and then... So at some point in time, we just got to close the computer and say, okay,
I'm back done. Okay.
There's this big burning ball in the sky called the sun. I've heard about it, and I want to see it once before I die. I think we're to that point. So thank you, everyone, for joining us for the Webcomic Beacon 174.
144.
44?
144.
Okay. Oh, come on, but then it'd be 175 right before your big anniversary.
Thanks to everyone who showed up for episode 144 of the Webcomic Beacon at webcomicbeacon.com. Stay tuned for more EPs in the coming future. The coming future. That's the same thing. You can also check out webcomicbeacon.com/calendar for when we plan ahead enough and actually will schedule it. You can see it on that link. This has been Fess of Fessworks.com.
And Adam of theappleofdiscord.com.
Alex of alexesguide.net.
And Mike of onyxsparrow.com.
Tune in for more at webcomicbeacon.com.
Actually, don't most of the episodes start with you arguing with somebody anyway? I mean, maybe. That's usually where
it, I mean, no, it doesn't.
Sounds about right.